The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Successful people can be at the top of their game in the business world and as parents, but it can sometimes be difficult to stay above it all. Now it's time to learn from an entrepreneur who has made this a reality. Welcome to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris and his guests will share ideas and experiences to help you manage your life in business and as a parent. Now, here's Chris Efesiou.
Hello, everyone. It's good to have you here with us today. If your child was born in the 1990s or later, he or she belongs to the Internet generation or Generation IY. Gen IYs know the world through a prism that is different from that of their parents' generation, and that often creates gaps in parent-child communication and understanding. Is this electronic overconnection in cyberspace helpful or harmful for their future? And while the children may become more electronically savvy, actually far more electronically savvy than their parents could ever hope to be, one has to wonder if this is happening at the expense of other significant social aptitudes. Dr. Tim Elmore is a leading authority on how to understand the next generation and prepare tomorrow's leaders today. He is a best-selling author of more than 25 books, including Generation IY, Our Last Chance to Save Their Future, Artificial Maturity, Helping Kids Meet the Challenges of Becoming Authentic Adults, and the Habitudes series. Tim is founder and president of Growing Leaders, an organization dedicated to mentoring today's young people to become the leaders of tomorrow, and it is my pleasure to have him as my guest today. Tim, thank you for being on the show.
Chris, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. For the benefit of our listeners, and I must say I had to quickly educate myself on the IY. I knew Generation Y, but, yeah. but I knew that there was a difference. So rather from your mouth than from mine, please explain to us what Generation IY is.
Well, it's just a term we're using that I think becomes a helpful handle. We've all been reading about the millennials or Gen Y for over a decade, but I believe the second half of Gen Y is different than the first half. Any teacher or really even any parent that's you know got a good perspective, they realize there's been a shift on. And so even within a single generation, the second half or the shift to the second half would be different than the first. So the Gen IY kids would be the kids born since 1990. The early Gen Y kids would be the 80s kids. They're now 20-somethings. And right. Gen I would be post-1990. And because, Chris, of the world they grew up in, they're screenagers. they've just been in front of screens all the time. It has made them different. And I'm always careful to say not worse or better, but just very different. And they represent a generation of firsts. So we parents or employers who employ these young people are sometimes at odds as to how to lead them. Let me just give you one example, and I'll volley it back to you. They represent a generation of first. This is the first generation of kids that don't need adults to get information. I mean, up until this point, we were the grand brokers, you know, the teacher or the parent. We had all the data. They needed us for this. Well, now they don't need us for that. So I often tell moms and dads, they don't need you for information. They need you for interpretation. Let me help you make sense of all you know. Let me give you context to the content that you stuck in your brain from YouTube or whatever. But it's a completely different, I shouldn't say completely, it's a very different job description than what we had perhaps 30 years ago. So we're just trying to really educate parents, teachers, coaches, youth workers on how to how to lead wisely this emerging generation.
You know, I never thought of it or heard of it put as succinctly as that, but you're right. I mean, no child has any need for information because it's right there, their fingertips,
yeah,
literally. And one of the things that I must say is that while that may be not necessarily all good, nothing is all good or all bad,
sure,
I have got to say that information in the hands of the kids, if you look at it from a responsible parenting point of view, has probably had a positive effect to the parents, because you can no longer just wing information at your child. If you're lucky enough for your child to come and ask you a question and they didn't bother to go find it out on Google, you better know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because they will make it a point. It will be their case for them to whip out their iPhone and just go to Google and prove you wrong. So when I was parenting my daughter, this was just at the very beginning. She's 26 now. She was born in 87. So that was the thrust of it came when she was in middle school and certainly in high school and college. But dinner conversations, still I was the one that was wearing the hat of the person that knew it all. And if she needed to find out more information, she actually had to go somewhere else, not on her phone.
Yeah.
So while that is a good thing, because I'm a firm believer that information is powerful, I am an even stronger believer that the right information is what really carries the day. Because
absolutely.
Because information for information's sake becomes white noise.
Yeah.
In my mind, anyway. I mean, in my business, it's all around me all the time. It's only what I choose to touch and act on that becomes actionable or has some value.
Absolutely. No, you're right. You're describing this new world we live in. And even when I'm in front of about 50,000 students a year, and I am now having to get used to a different audience in the seat out there, where they're not looking at me, they're looking at their phone, checking on what I'm saying, like just like you described. So it does keep us honest. But you're right, that the downside, or the side we must be careful about, is that the information may be something that is inaccurate, damaging, not helpful. I love what Herbert Simon said, Chris. Herbert Simon said, a wealth of information can create a poverty of attention. And I think that's what we've seen. Attention spans are about 7 seconds now in kids growing up, K-12 education. And it's because there's so much coming at them, the filters just have to be strong. And very often, the teacher up front of the class or the parent to the dinner table is, you know, good luck with this one. You know, they've got to get their message through when 1,000 other messages have been streaming at the minds of our kids. So it's a new day. We've got to parent in a new way.
There's no question about it. So clearly, as we are parenting in a new way, we need to be vigilant of certain things. We need to be mindful of other things that may be going by the wayside. My experience is that the more time you have a person in front of a screen, the less they are going to talk to others, and that social exchange suffers to a great degree. And I don't want to think of a world that your personality will not count in order to get a job, get ahead, do this, do that.
Yeah.
Certainly, I don't think you can be a leader without having a personality.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Well, I think you're spot on. In fact, one of the inverse relationships we've seen is as technology goes up, soft skills often go down. Because I don't have to work at the relationship when there's a screen in front of me. So for instance, in our house, one of the ways we countered that or combated that was we said for every hour our kid has in front of a screen, let's say a video game, they have an hour with real people, with three-dimensional verbal and nonverbal communication with real people. So that balanced it out, 2 hours in front of a screen, 2 hours with real people. We wanted there to be a sense of emotional intelligence in our kids to be able to talk to adults and peers. And I think that really helped. but we had to be intentional. We can't just let it happen and then hope to God they're going to have the life skills they need when they leave home. So we're after that. And it sounds like you're after that as well.
Yes. And again, in a lot of ways, I consider myself lucky to have parented at a time which was not really that long ago, but you know, now my daughter is 26, and whether I like it or not, I will be a grandfather at some point. So you know, I have to stay ahead of the game so that I know how to interact with a generation who knows what it's going to be called.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
You talk about the social skills that are being taken away that are lost. Is there, other than the actual discussion and whatever that carries, are there particular skills whose loss you find particularly harmful?
Absolutely. Let me just throw out a couple real quick that I think everyone would say, I see that too. Another inverse relationship we've seen is the drop in empathy. A world full of screens, which, as you pointed out, is not all bad. In fact, technology is not going away, so we need to not get mad. We need to get busy. But the more time in front of a screen, the life skill, if I can put it that way, of empathy tends to drop. This is very interesting. The early Gen Y kids, as we began to evaluate them through school and then after school, were highly compassionate. It was a generation when your daughter and my daughter, same thing. They you know, let's change the world, let's make a difference, let's, you know, join the Peace Corps or whatever. There was that mantra. The University of Michigan has released results of a longitudinal study on college students. They tell us that college students today are 40% less empathetic than just 10 years ago. Not 4% less, 40% less. That's measurable.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know if I can document exactly why, but I'm thinking it's a smartphone and I just don't grow in my empathy when I'm looking at a screen and the words I'm having a bad day appear on the screen. I just don't feel empathy. And then on top of that, they're inundated with, you know, photos of starving children in Bangladesh everywhere they look. So I think they're numb to it, and they might be laughing at what they might have cried about 10 years ago. Now, it may sound like I'm overspeaking, but this is a skill set we've got to develop. It's no wonder we're hearing about bullying and cyberbullying. Of course it's up. We're thinking this is all funny, and sometimes we've not stepped into the shoes of that person we don't understand long enough to empathize instead of just make fun. So that would be one clear one that I think we're going to have to go after and begin to build.
Without question. And again, as you point out very correctly, unless you can feel for someone, you cannot walk in their shoes. So there are statistics that say that almost everybody has been or will be bullied in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
If you have been bullied, you know how it feels, and it doesn't feel good. It does not feel good. So having the empathy to stop it is a major thing. Let's talk more about that at the other side of a short break. My guest is Tim Elmore. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Efesiou. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Efesiou understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Efesiou. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Efesiou. My guest is Tim Elmore. Please visit his website, growingleaders.com, and follow him on Twitter at Tim Elmore. For information on this program, speaking engagements, and other activities, visit my website, chrisefesiou.com, or straightupwithchris.com. Facebook page is Chris Efesiou, and on Twitter, I'm Chief Daddy Officer. We spoke about the effects or what seems to be worrisome about Generation IY, and Tim told us that in the past 10 years, studies have shown that 40% of young adults or college students, I don't want to misquote it, were less empathetic than the prior 10 years. And of course, that is alarming, but in my experience, Tim, empathy is one of those things that you're not, well, in part you're born with, but I think you cultivate it over time, and that comes with maturity and other kinds of things. So I would expect that an older person will be more empathetic than a younger person, but not necessarily. So, but you define something called artificial maturity.
Yeah.
So tell us about that and how does that play into what we're talking about?
Okay. Well, this the term artificial maturity probably sounds very derogatory to a listener, so let me explain. It really isn't. It's birthed out of a great belief in kids today. I really do believe in this generation of kids. They may be the greatest America's ever seen. But I say that with one caveat. If we rethink the way we parent, lead, teach, manage, coach, and ultimately employ them, artificial maturity is the sum total, is the reality that happens because of two parallel realities. Kids today are overexposed to information far earlier than they're ready. Most people would agree with that. In other words, 90% of kids in preschool have already been online. They're surfing a web. They're playing with a tablet. They've become very savvy. So they're getting information, probably information they don't need, but certainly information far earlier than they're ready to get it.
Correct.
At the same time, kids are underexposed to real-life experiences far later than they're ready. So this overexposure, underexposure creates a kid that might come across very smart, very savvy, confident, but they may lack emotional maturity, the life skills or the wisdom that comes with time. You know there's a big difference between knowing it up here in your brain and having it real, it's the difference between information and wisdom or knowledge and wisdom. And I am thinking that sometimes the good old-fashioned components of work, I know that sounds like I'm a grandpa right now, but work does something for us. We all can critique that waitress in the restaurant or that retailer or whatever, but we get a job and we do it and we go, oh my goodness, it's harder than I thought. These people are nasty to talk to. And so artificial maturity is simply something we're going to have to address where we turn all that amazing data that's in their brain into real life experience. And I think it's very possible, but it's the move from artificial to authentic maturity that moms and dads really need to be focused on.
And of course, moms and dads have a pretty heavy hand in helping the kids make that shift from whatever it is that they are to real maturity.
And absolutely.
And I have always believed that the parent is the ultimate mentor of their children. So
absolutely.
How we mentor our children is going to a very large degree play into what they take or perceive to be their the real world out there, and how they stack up against others in that big world out there, as well as at the same time, it gives us the responsibility to educate ourselves, to become more updated, to make sure that the information we're given to the children is the right information, not necessarily the information we received when we were being parented.
Right.
So I have got to believe that parents, obviously, they have some terrific behaviors, but they probably have some behaviors that are less than perfect. And I'm sure you can talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I just finished a book. I mentioned this to you briefly, Chris, called 12 Huge Mistakes Parents Can Avoid. The reason I did it is not because I'm just angry right now, but it's so often when we work with educators in schools or universities, coaches on the athletic field, the challenges we're facing ultimately go back to what's happening in the home or what's not happening in the home. So because I think we are a new generation of parents, just like we're leading a new generation of kids, we're a generation of firsts. We're trying to help these kids navigate life when they've got a portable device in their hand and they're able to broadcast their every thought or emotion on Twitter in real time, you know, whether it's right or wrong or whatever. So I just did a blog post where I'm going to just start some conversation with you, Chris, and see what you think. But
absolutely.
It seems like there are four biggies that I see that parents do very, very often that tends to diminish the chances of their kid becoming a healthy adult. Here they are. Number one, we risk too little. This is a very risk-averse generation of kids. I've got the numbers to prove it. But of course they're risk-averse. We won't let them fall. We won't let them fail. We swoop in, you know, that sort of thing. We're safety belts, safety seats. Of course, we are a safety-obsessed group of adults. Now, that's natural. I've got two kids of my own. I want them to be safe. But if we don't let them take risks when the stakes are low at 9 or 10 or 11 years old, they can have phobias when they're in their 20s because now the stakes are high and they're scared to death to move out of the house. And you probably know this, but the majority of kids last year, when they got done with college, moved back home. Well, of course they're moving back home. So mistake one is I think we risk too little. Mistake two, we rescue too quickly. I think the average kid in America, now there are exceptions, but the average kid in America thinks or believes that if they fail at something, some adult will swoop in and save them. If they forget their backpack in school, if they don't get a project done, if they fail a grade. In fact, I need to tell you a story. I got an email from the University of Syracuse that said, Tim, I knew you would enjoy this story. She said, one of the girls in my freshman class that I teach got a C- on her test. Well, she had never gotten a C- in her life up to this point. So she had a meltdown right there in class. I mean, everybody's kind of looking at her as she has this meltdown. The first thing she thinks to do is reaches in her backpack, pulls out her cell phone, and she texts mom right there in class. Mom makes the mistake of texting right back and saying, call me right away. So right there in class, this girl calls her mom. Well, you know, cell phone calls are kind of loud, so everything kind of stops as the cell phone conversation is going on. And if that's not bad enough, she goes, okay, mom. She hands the phone to the professor and says she wants to talk to you. Now, I wish I could tell you Well, obviously what this mom wanted to do was negotiate a B minus out of that C minus right there. But
right.
I wish I could tell you this was an isolated incident. It's happening hundreds of thousands of times around the country. Now that mother, if we were to interview her right now, would say, well, I felt bad for my baby. I didn't want her to go through this. This was a traumatic thing. Of course it was. But the only way she'll learn to navigate is if instead we say things like, sweetheart, I'm so sorry you got a C minus. Guess what? I got four of them when I was in college and I still graduated. Now you need to find a tutor. You need to talk to your teacher and find out how you can make this up, but you can do it. Love you. Bye. Now, I know that sounds cruel, but it is a mild form of child abuse to continue to rescue when they need to learn eventually to navigate life for themselves. So that's number two. Real quick, two more. The third one I think we make is we rave too easily. Now, I'm a fan of praising kids. I hope my kids would say I encouraged them a bunch as they were growing up. But you know the drill today. I mean, you play Little League Baseball, everybody gets a trophy. Whether you win or lose, everybody gets the same trophy. Gets ribbons. I was at a Little League Baseball award ceremony where 11th place ribbons were given out. I'm talking about, and I tell you what, especially for males, I know what they're thinking. They're going, well, why try hard? I'm going to get the same award whether I do nothing or do everything, so I'll do nothing. And so sometimes I think all the praise that's well-intentioned can backfire and actually diminish the ambition of kids in the end. Carol Dweck writes on this in her book, Mindset. It's crazy. And then one more. The fourth biggie, I think, that we often do is we reward too frequently. Now, again, I'm a fan of rewards. I think we need to reward great things. But notice I said great things. When we reward things that life just naturally demands of us, we're setting them up for an adult life where they're looking for their boss to clap for them when they show up at work on time. I don't think that's going to happen. And again, I don't want to oversimplify or overspeak here, but I think rewards need to be for something they've achieved, and it really deserves, not cleaning up your plate necessarily. Or maybe when they're young, clean up your plate. But by the time they turn 10, 11, 12, 15 years old, they need to sense achievement in some area. And then the praise matches the achievement. Much to be said there, but I feel like those are some of the most common ones that when we work with teachers and parents, we see this is happening way too much. And unfortunately, the victims are the kids. And they are unready then when they turn 18 or 21. So I'll stop there, Chris, and let you kind of volley back. And
it's conversations like this that I kind of wish that we were on television, because then people can see me kind of waving my hands and air clapping while you're saying this. Because, you know, if I have said this once, I've said it a million times. Nobody wants to displease a child, and especially displease your son or daughter. You don't want anything bad to happen to them. But you're not teaching them a lesson when they come in dead last to reward them with a ribbon. Because
absolutely,
they will expect that.
Mm-hmm.
when they go to work and they come in a dead last performance, that they will be rewarded with the same thing as number one did. And no, the world doesn't work that way.
That's right.
And my biggest issue with parenting in the real world is that the parenting, whether it is happening at Gen IY or before or from here on out, it has to be the training ground for real world. Understand.
Absolutely.
People were raising adults, were not raising children.
Yeah.
You have to teach your child, train your child to be able to take all of that in stride, and we have to show them that. Let's talk more about that as soon as we come back from a short break. My guest is Tim Elmore. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epicu. My guest is Tim Elmore. Please visit his website, growingleaders.com, and follow him on Twitter at Tim Elmore. That, of course, is E-L-M-O-R-E. So before the break in the last segment, Tim articulated very clearly the four big crippling behaviors that parents tend to have toward their children, and they do it for all the right reasons, but it all comes out wrong. And Tim, I'm going to take the liberty to see if I can list them, not articulate them. So I believe the first one was risking too little.
Yep.
Rescuing too quickly, mm-hmm. praising too easily, and rewarding too frequently. And if I were a preacher, this will be the point where I'm going to be saying, "Can I get an amen?"
That's right. Absolutely.
but it's entirely true that the preparation has to be done in-house that children are ready to face that big world. And no, it's not a bad world out there. It's the world as you would like it to be. And so it's up to you to make it whatever it is that you want to make it. But if you perceive it to be a negative thing, it'll never be positive.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of questions from our listeners. Okay. Let's take them. This one comes from Adam in Houston. He says, "What a great show. I never thought about the fact that our kids didn't need us for information, but for interpretation. So how can parents impact and interact with their IY generation?"
That's a great question. And I think it starts with us realizing they are going to get information that is damaging and inaccurate along the way. Probably information they don't need. So we need to help them build filters inside where they can create a good worldview, so when we're not around, they're still thinking right. For instance, with our kids, and I certainly am far from a perfect grown dad, but with our kids, everything we did, we would just about debrief everything. For instance, we'd go see a movie together as a family when our kids were younger. And after the movie, we would always sit down and talk about the main characters. What do you think? What do you think they were thinking about that? What do you think their values were? How do you think we think about that? And we would process. We were teaching at a very elementary level critical thinking skills and how to interpret. So it wasn't information, it was interpretation, the characters in that movie. We'd read articles, sometimes we would have our kids watch the news. They didn't like to watch the news when they were young, but here we'd watch the news together, and I'd say, pick out a news story, one of the problems that you just heard about in that 30-minute broadcast, and it was full of problems, and if you were the leader of that, what would you do to solve that problem? And again, that got them out of complaining mode and into, okay, here would be the solution I would offer. But the point is, as a parent, you're always thinking training, training, training. Of course you love them. Don't stop loving them. But you're a trainer. You're, as Chris said, you're the ultimate mentor for their life. And you're helping them process all this data so that, again, like I said, when you're not around, they're thinking right. They know exactly how to process and interpret. They get off to a university and they have a professor that's completely different than they are. They can process how to eat the fish and spit out the bones, if I can say it that way. So anyway, I'll stop there, but I think it just means we have to be always thinking, let's make sense of every experience we have and process relationships, news stories, movies, programs, and in the process, I think we can really help them to think and process well.
Absolutely, and I would also say here that this is not a skill that you're doing only when your children are young. It's a skill that lasts a lifetime. I mean, I was doing exactly the same thing when I was parenting my daughter, and in the morning I'll always have the morning news on, whatever the morning show was, but it was pretty heavy with news, and she would much rather see something else. I told her that, you know, there are times where she can have her shows, but in the morning, we just fill our head with news, whatever that news is. And she didn't like it, but she watched it. Mm-hmm. Now, as she drives to work, oftentimes she will call me in the morning and say, did you hear about this? And what did you think about it? On the odd day that I may not necessarily be in front of the news, I may be caught having to discuss something that I'm not aware of, and that doesn't feel good. But so all I'm trying to say is that it's a life skill, and it is a life skill you want your child to have.
Absolutely.
Let's take the next question. This comes from Jacqueline in King of Prussia, PA. She says, with kids being connected to technology constantly, what are the greatest challenges facing parents, and how can we tackle them and overcome them?
Great question. My first swipe at that question would be this. I think one of the greatest skill sets, and this becomes a challenge for parents because we have to do it in the midst of a bunch of screens in their life, is the building of emotional intelligence. Now, let me explain that term. That's a term that's become a buzzword in the corporate world over the last, since 1995, when Daniel Goleman wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence. Emotional intelligence is now a greater predictor of success in life than IQ. In other words, EQ is a greater predictor of success in our kids' lives than IQ. Emotional intelligence is the sum total of four things. My self-awareness, I'm aware of how I come across to others. My self-management, I can manage myself and my emotions and do what I need to do, even when I don't feel like it. My social awareness, I'm aware of how others around me are connected or disconnected, and then my relationship management. I can manage the primary relationships in my life. Most of you listening right now would say, absolutely. In fact, the grown-ups need to grow in that area too, not just the kids. This is a very difficult thing to build in front of a screen. Now, I'm not saying technology is bad. I'm just saying, with technology, we've got to introduce real face-to-face relationships. It might mean, as a mom or dad, you say, we're going to do a technology fast for a half a day or a day, and we're going to have real face-to-face relationships. And here's why. It's not because I'm a killjoy. I just want you to build these skills. I remember times my wife and I would have parties where our adult friends would come over, and we'd have our kids host the party. They'd learn to say, hi, Mr. Johnson, come on in. Can I take your coat? Would you like some iced tea? Have you met Mrs. Smith? Now, they rolled their eyes at first, thinking this was a goofy idea, but I'm telling you, they learned to interact with adults, and they're both gainfully employed right now. Thank you very much. But that was the building of skill sets that was in spite of all the technology that was screaming at them. So I would say emotional intelligence and those kinds of soft skills are just going to be absolutely critical to build, and we're going to have to find ways to do it, maybe even apart from a screen. So I'll stop there, Chris.
No, that's perfect. So let's we've talked about the crippling parenting behaviors, and clearly the emotional intelligence is something that, no matter what article you read on leadership these days, it is the part that comes through. It is defined. The emotional intelligence is defined as the number one, two, or three most important element in leadership.
Yeah.
And And how can it not be when it includes those four elements that you said? So I think somebody once told me that if when you do something and you do it repeatedly for about 3 weeks, it becomes a habit. And so the idea was do something good for 3 weeks and you pick up a good habit, and don't do something bad for 3 weeks and that's, you know, you don't pick up a bad habit. But you have something that you very cleverly have termed as habitudes, habits and attitudes. Talk to us about that.
Okay. Well, habitudes is a resource we developed for moms, dads, teachers, coaches. Habitudes are simply images that form leadership habits and attitudes. We have come to believe that futurist Dr. Leonard Sweet was spot on when he said, this generation of kids is an epic generation. And by epic, I don't just mean they love the word epic, although you have noticed they love the word epic. But E-P-I-C reminds me epic describes these kids. The letter E in epic reminds me they're experiential. They love learning from experiences. They're not looking for a sage on the stage with a lecture. I believe they're looking for a guide on the side with an experience. So the more we can create experiences and environments, even in the home, where that we can, from those, we can teach something, we've got them. The letter P reminds me they're participatory. This simply means they're a generation of kids that grew up participating in the outcomes of where almost anything is going. They weighed in where the family went on vacation. They can hardly watch a reality TV show without voting on who stays on the show. They're participating. They get to put their fingerprints on everything. We want them to share their opinion. So is there a way, moms and dads, that you can let them participate and help guide where things go? Maybe the vacation or the week or whatever. The letter I in epic reminds me, they're image rich. They grew up with screens and images. They are a visual generation. And then the letter C reminds me, they're connected. They're connected both technologically and socially. So getting back to habitudes, Chris, habitudes is simply an epic way to have conversations about the life skills and leadership we think kids need to learn. So it's there's actually a four-book set. And I actually started having these conversations at our dinner table. Once a week, we would talk about the iceberg or rivers and floods or chess and checkers. And every one of these images represents a principle. In fact, let me just give one to you right now that, you know, we can pretend like we're sitting at dinner and I'm leading the conversation. Rivers and floods. I just mentioned that one. I had a picture. In fact, all these are images in books. So every chapter is anchored by an image. So we have this really amazing picture of this flood taking over this house. It's pretty graphic. And we simply say this, rivers and floods are both bodies of water. But after that, it's a contrast. It's no longer a comparison. Right. Floods are water going in every direction all at once and often doing damage. Right. Rivers, on the other hand, are water flowing in a single direction because they have banks to them. And if it's a wide river, it's still flowing in one direction. And if you use them right, rivers can be very helpful. We can harness the power of a river. And we simply say rivers and floods reminds me of the power of focus and vision. Most of the time, we start out a school year as a river. We got a clear goal. Here we go. But over time, it becomes a flood. Options pop up. Distractions arise. Opportunities. Facebook happens, whatever. And what was once flowing is now flooding. Soon we become 9 miles wide and 1 inch deep. So we're simply saying, kids, you need to be a river, not a flood. And what this might play out in their younger life is you choose one extracurricular activity, not 15, not 25, one. And we're going to have family dinner, and we're going to do this and that, but we're going to be a river, not a flood. We're going to be focused, not fuzzy. Well, that's a huge principle. In fact, that's a principle companies need to relearn probably every year. But certainly kids, in a world of a billion options, well, that was just a fun way to talk about focus because it's a picture. And so habitudes allows you to teach with images, conversations, and experiences. And every chapter kind of is lined out that way, where there's discussion questions, evaluations. So, Chris, again, it's not a sales pitch, but this is just it's just simply a resource where conversations can be had about stuff that really matters, we think, in life and helps them to live proactively rather than just reacting to life along the way.
My guest is Tim Elmore. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris. We'll be back in a moment.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epicu. My guest is Tim Elmore. Please visit his website, growingleaders.com, and follow him on Twitter at Tim Elmore. Well, wonderful usable tools up to now, Tim. There is a point that I think that every parent has to deal with, how to kind of drive a stake at the heart of that peer pressure and say, no, you don't have to be a part of a herd.
Right.
You can think of yourself and you can lead yourself. And if you lead yourself, you have just defined the leader.
Yeah.
So tell us, clearly we understand why kids don't want to deviate from the norm, because being different is not good. Only to learn later in life that being different is good. But,
yeah.
You know, at age 5, 10, or whatever, they don't necessarily feel that way. So
right.
Are there things we can do to kind of shake them out of that herd mentality and to influence them in a positive way?
Absolutely. I think there is. And I don't have a silver bullet or a magic wand, but there are definitely steps we can take. Actually, one of our habitude images, it deals with this. It's called thermostats or thermometers. And we have our kids think about a thermostat and thermometer. And the bottom line is, thermostats and thermometers both have to do with the temperature. But there's a huge difference. Thermometers can only tell you what the temperature is. Thermostats set the climate. And we simply wanted to encourage our kids not to change their personality, but as they grew older, to be one that set the climate, that set the attitude, the atmosphere in the class or on the team. And they set the tone. And that meant the temperature was defined by them, at least for their life. They didn't impose on anybody else, but it set it for their life. We believe, and what we taught our kids, was that you become a thermostat by doing two things: living by values and adding value. Living by values and adding value. In other words, so if I have a set of standards that I own, I mean, they're mine, they're principles that I live by, and we tried to build these into our kids where they owned it. It wasn't mom and dad imposing, but the kids said, that's what I believe. I just believe when someone, anybody at any age, lives by a set of values, even if you don't agree with them, you respect them for it. I mean, you look at somebody and you go, well, I got to hand it to them. They're excellent in that area. So we tried to help them build an arsenal of values that they live by. But then adding value is just as important. I think the people that become thermostats in life are constantly adding value to others. Instead of just thinking about themselves and their own needs and their own wants, they're saying or doing something in interactions that somehow encourage or, again, add value to someone else. As we work with tens of thousands of students, middle school, high school, and college students, we're finding that the students that begin to do this begin to be thermostats, and they break out of the herd. It's not that they're antisocial, but they are able to take a stand even when everybody else is going a different direction. So let me share one picture of how this might look, and then I know, Chris, we probably need to wrap up here pretty soon. One of the things that we did in our home that was absolutely the smartest thermostat versus thermometer decision we ever made was when our kids turned 13, we introduced to them a rite of passage experience into their life. Meaning, right about the time they're entering their teen years, with my daughter, for instance, who's 25 years old, when she was 13, we chose together with her six women that would be one-day mentors for her the following year. In other words, during her eighth grade year, she would meet with these ladies one-on-one for one day. And all I asked the ladies to do was let Bethany shadow them for the day. We pick women that we really respected as wonderful role models and women that Bethany thought were really cool. Well, I'm telling you, it was amazing. Every one of these ladies took Bethany under their wing for a day. Some of them went to work and they took her to work. Some of them stayed at home. But Bethany got to watch a healthy, well-adjusted leader who was a woman, just like she was an emerging woman. And I, the only thing I asked, as I said, would you just share one life message with our daughter before the day is over? A message you wish you would have heard when you were 13 and nobody ever shared it with you. Well, Chris, I don't have time to go into this, but I mean, we had, one of the gals was a nurse. She took Bethany into the maternity ward, and Bethany was working in the maternity ward with her that day, and then she sat through a class for unwed mothers. I mean, it was an every one of them did something epic with our daughter, and their life message was spot on. Totally echoed what I was teaching in the house, but at the same time provided another voice that echoed this value. The bottom line is, my wife and I watched our little laid-back eighth-grade girl go from thermometer to thermostat that year, and she has broken out of the herd. But it was the voices of other people in the community. It really does take a village, I think, sometimes, to really do this. And so in the introduction of mentors into her life were absolutely powerful. So I'll stop there.
I don't think that there is ever a case where there are too few villagers. Because, yeah. You know, every one of them can provide some value. And, I mean, what she did was brilliant because I did it somewhat differently, but the idea is to expose them to why it is better to be in way A versus way B.
Absolutely.
So we've got 2 minutes to go, and I'm going to put you on the spot and say, to the 20,000 or so people who are listening to you right now, if you had to give them one golden nugget of advice, what would that be?
Wow. I think it might be they don't need a pal, they need a parent. One of the greatest temptations I think we fall in today, especially we who are perhaps boomers or Xers or whatever, we want to stay cool and hip. We want to be so close to our kids, particularly as they get older, that we buddy up to them and we try to, you know, talk like them and be this pal. I made a decision years and years ago. My kids have lots of buddies. They've only got one dad, and that's the card I got to play. And that means I may not be cool this week. I may have to say something that's not very popular. They may roll their eyes and laugh or cry or get mad. But I tell you what, if I'll lead them well, and Chris, this is what you say week in and week out, if I'll lead them well and forget the pal thing, I'm going to have a great pal once they leave the home. But I've led them, and I've not worried about being liked. I've worried about more being respected, and they have gotten what they need from me. And this takes an emotional secure person. We've got to be okay with not being real popular all the time. So maybe the best way to put it is we've got to be healthy and well-adjusted, or we can't raise a healthy, well-adjusted future adult in our house.
And there's an amen going again on that comment, because that is exactly right. I'm not even going to comment because we're going to be way out of time. Tim, I thank you so very much for great show today, and I know I learned a lot, and I am sure our listeners have as well. I hope you consider coming back for another conversation in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chris. It's great to be on the show with you.
Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
I hope you join me next Thursday at 6 p.m. East, 3 West on Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk for Business and Parenthood. Until then, seize the moment, every moment, at work and at home. We'll talk more next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Chris Heffacy.
Thank you again for tuning in to Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. Please join your host, Chris Effaciu, again next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Make it an engaging week at work and at home.